This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Today on the Breakfast Grill, I am talking to Dato' Sri Mir Habib, the Managing Director of Habib Jewels, one of the country's oldest and most established jewellery and gold firms. Dato', thank you for talking to us. Now, obviously, we find ourselves in very challenging times. COVID has come back with a vengeance. I guess from you, let's start with a quick situation report on how business has been doing. And I think specifically in terms of your branch network, how that has been affected in the midst of this pandemic.
Okay. Thank you, Chuan, for having me. I would say that last year during the MCO was quite a very, very strange period. We've been in business for more than 60 years for the first time ever, almost like a lockdown. And I must say that I was quite scared during this period. So during that lockdown period, we were coming up with a lot of ideas, what we can do and all that. So since then, I must say that we are very, very fortunate. Business has been quite okay because a lot of people look at jewelry, especially gold, as not just as an as an adornment, but also as an investment. During this period of uncertainty, a lot of people have been buying gold. So we have been quite fortunate.
Yeah, well, get into the whole gold discussion in a few minutes because that forms a large portion of your business, Dato. But just in terms of the business itself, your own your operations, how have your branch network been affected, if at all? Have you had to close stores? Have you had to maybe address some of the workforce in terms of maybe putting them on leave, or have they come back? I mean, what is the situation on the ground? Because obviously, Habib is a private company, so we don't have straight visibility into those metrics.
Yes. I think during the MCO period, I think a lot of companies were cutting down the employees and also salaries and stuff like that. But for me, we have always been very unconventional in the way that we were doing it. We did not do any of those, and we maintain all our staff. And in fact, not only that, we actually hired more people after that. It is just that it's just a strategy that we did. But of course, we have a few different businesses in our group. For example, the main business that we have is Habib, which is selling gold and jewelry. So we also have like a distributorship or franchise business like Pandora, another brand called Toast from Spain, and a couple of other brands, including some timepieces. And then we also have pawn shop, Islamic pawn shop business called Aranwa Express. So we have a wide range of businesses. So some of the businesses were doing well. Some business went through quite a bit of challenge. For example, if you were to look at Pandora, we also depend on a lot of tourist business. So that part of the business was quite challenging during this period. So we, I must say that we did close a few stores, but we transferred our staff to different branches. For example, we used to have presence at the airport. So we closed our stores at the airport and a few other not so strategic locations because we have stores nearby. So we don't have to have so many of the stores because we have same customers going to these two different stores, right? So we had to make a little bit of changes, but not too much.
So unlike, say, for example, one of your rivals, Tome. Tome has predominantly mall-based stores, right? And I think they've got 50 outlets. I'm not sure how many branches Habib has. But what is the ratio of your short stores, standalone stores versus mall-based stores? And will that mix change going forward because of the social distancing and COVID SOPs and restrictions that have now been put in place, which almost seems like such a normalcy now as well?
Mm-hmm. I think compared to many of my people in the industry, the competitors who have like chain stores, we probably have lesser stores than others. But what we tend to do is in each and every store, we would like to give them an experience. So some of our stores, what we have done lately is also it's slightly bigger in terms of size. What you ask, we don't, most of our stores are in the shopping malls. We have a couple of stores that are standalone, shop lots and stuff like that. But the important thing is we find that this is something good for our customers because the customers are able to come to us and they are able to see a wider range of stuff, you know. So we have our strategy a little bit different from a lot of our competitors. We were having about like 28, 29 stores, but right now we have 30 stores. We have opened new store lately.
So in terms of sales performance, we had a look at Tomei, which is one of your rivals. And in the first quarter to March, they did report a nice year-on-year bounce. Partly, I guess, because of last year was a low base effect. But also maybe because, as you're saying, people are starting to buy gold. And I think specifically for them, there was a lot of yellow gold demand, right? What do you think drove that resurgence in demand? Is it basically revenge spending? Was it because people didn't have to pay for their loans, maybe the moratorium period? Also, maybe that like that Aisina, was it part of the resurgence? And I think more importantly, is it going to be a sustained demand or not?
Yes, okay. I think it started off from last year because since the pandemic that started, most countries have been creating a lot of debts. You know, like in America and all that, they started printing more money, and which will create inflation. And gold has always been seen as a hedge against inflation. So last year itself, there was a big increase in the gold price because a lot of people thought that it's a good investment. So that has also given a lot of confidence to our customers. And at the same time, you can see that the central banks have also decreased the interest rates. So people putting money in their banks, the returns have been quite low. So that started the ball rolling from last year itself. There's a lot of confidence that was built during this period. At the same time, jewelry is something unique in the sense that you can buy it as an adornment, you know, beside investment. So it's like when you buy, you don't feel like you're wasting your money, and then you get something new. And at the end of the day, when someone look at it, you know, it went up about nearly 30%, and then it just came down a little bit and still settled way above what it was in the beginning of the year. This year, when it continued first quarter, and I must also say that Aisina played a big role. Some people want to diversify a little bit, put money in not just in the gold jewelry. People were also buying gold bars as investment, physical gold bars. This is something that has and given confidence to the customers, especially those people who have believed in gold before. In the last, it just didn't happen now, but it's been going on for the last couple of years. Even before the pandemic, the gold price has been slowly going up. So many people have seen a good return on investment, and that has given a lot of confidence in gold. And beside that, we can see that for about a year, a lot of people have not been spending money on other things. You know, people are not going out for vacations, holidays. You know, some people even say that they don't spend a lot of money on their hairdressers. So, and people still want to do a bit of shopping and feel good about buying and selling. Sometimes people even bring their old jewelries and sell their old jewelries and buy new ones, you know. So there's a combination of reason why the sales has gone up. And I must also say that we have been also communicating to customers, explaining some of the reason what has happened in the global market, why there has been quite a lot of demand for gold, and it has also given a lot of exposure. And finally, I must say that marketing also plays a big role especially digital marketing, a lot of people are actually looking at what is going on, and there's a lot more exposure to communication today. The barrier to entry has become quite low. For example, there's also a lot of new jewelers has come on board, and you can see that there is a long queue going into some of these stores, you know.
Yeah.
And the reason I would say is, before, if you start a business, you want to establish your brand, you need to spend a lot of money on marketing, you know, whether it's newspaper, TV, or other forms. But today, if someone's got their own social media, Instagram, Facebook especially, they can create their own media, you know, so it's like they are able to communicate with their customers. So that has made a big impact as well.
I'm talking this morning to Dato Sri Mia Habib, the Managing Director of Habib Jewels, one of the country's oldest and most established jewellery firms. After this, Dato Sri will come back up and discuss the latest MCO and your specific product lines in gold and in diamonds. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
I'm talking this morning to Dato Sri Mia Habib, the Managing Director of Habib Jewels. Now, you served in the past, Dato, as the Honorary Secretary of the Malaysia Retailers Association, I think March 2007 to May 2018. That's a long time, about 11 years, right? Obviously, you are one of the mainstays of the industry. How do you feel about this latest move to close malls and to basically just take emergency measures where this MCO is concerned? Obviously, the whole association and all their members are up in arms, right? But how do you feel about it?
I support the government to be careful with how we manage the situation. But I think what most of our members felt that it should be a little bit more well coordinated, and especially there should be more clarity in how this should be done. For example, we were told to close, most of the malls were told to close just one day before under the hotspot, the HIDE, H-I-D-E. So that was a little bit abrupt for a lot of members because we didn't even have much time. And for a lot of the people, Hari Raya period, just a few days before Raya, is the most important time where they can sell. For example, small traders, they sometimes borrow money from outside, or sometimes even from Along or whatever. They would stock up like a baju Melayu or baju kurung and things like that. And the best sales period is just a few days before Hari Raya. And you can imagine if they were just told close and then they are not able to sell their products. And after Hari Raya, no one would buy it, you see. So these are some of the feedback that we've been getting from a lot of smaller traders. So
do you think the government will reverse this measure? Do you think they will relax it? Because the other idea is that a lot of the clusters don't come from necessarily from malls or restaurants even, but from workplace clusters like in factories.
Yeah. But it's too late now because Raya is already the day after tomorrow. So today is the last day of that 3 days closure of the mall. So, you know, you must understand that, you know, a very high percentage of sales happen during the last 5 days or 4 days of before Raya, you know, because Malaysians, we tend to do a lot of things last minute. So we tend to go and buy things, you know, like a baju kurung, baju Melayu, or
yeah,
things like that, you know.
So what's the worst case scenario? I mean, is it basically, obviously lost sales is one of them, but how badly off are some of the smaller retailers who are not so financially resilient?
Yeah, I think for some of the smaller retailers, it's quite bad because the expenses are still there inside the shopping malls, the rental and the staff. You know, you can't cut down on your staff salary and all that, you know. smaller entrepreneurs, and sometimes they may also not have enough reserves, you know, and they put a lot of investment into their inventory, hoping to make a good sale just before the raya. So these are the people who will be most affected. But you know, for some of the other bigger players, maybe they have enough reserves. They may be able to overcome this period. Like what you said, you know, in shopping malls, generally it's very much more controlled. Even going into the mall, the shopping mall operators themselves, they have to take a lot of responsibilities. Also, the stores, the individual stores have their own responsibilities and follow the SOPs. And the police has been doing extremely good job. We get police coming in and checking every 1 hour. So,
has it helped that you guys decided to stay private? I mean, some of the biggest jewelry companies in the world are publicly traded. Obviously, LVMH is one of them, Richemont, Signet, and that's just around the world. You've also got people like Chow Tai Fook, who are very, 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 very big, but they're publicly traded. Has it helped that you're private in a way?
For me, it's very simple, because we were the first publicly listed jewelry company before, and we went the other way around.
So yeah, you went private.
Yeah, we went private after that. So having gone through both, I think the important thing is, you know, what is the objective? So after being listed, I found that there was no reason for us to be listed. But if there are other reasons, like if someone wants to tap into the capital market or other things, then it is worth it. But for me, I think so far I'm enjoying myself being a private company.
Has it curtailed your ability to expand because of no capital market exposure?
I think we can still expand with the kind of business that we are doing, because it gives us a lot of flexibility, because I don't have to be answerable to people. And one of the advantages that I have is I can plan for a longer term, for example. You know, we don't have to be every quarter answering to shareholders why we are doing certain things, you know.
Yeah.
So it gives us a lot of flexibility, because sometimes if you want to come up with a very solid plan, you might want to take two steps back before going forward, you know.
Yeah.
So sometimes you might want to consolidate over a period and all that, you know.
Yeah.
So this gives us flexibility. Our company is all about being agile, you know. So yeah, gives us a lot of flexibility.
We are talking this morning to Dato Sri Mia Habib, the Managing Director of Habib Jewels. Now, in terms of planning for the long term, e-commerce and online deliveries is really getting a lot of traction, especially among millennials who have adopted this new platform as easily as you would expect. What is Habib doing on this front, and how much of revenue is coming from online sources right now?
Okay, so the online source has been really, we expedited that last year. You know, our sales actually went up maybe almost 10 times more than what we were doing a year ago. So I think there's always an advantage during a crisis period like this. And we have really accelerated the development of the online. And we see a big potential in the online space, even though it is just about 2% or 3% of our entire turnover. There's a lot of potential, because originally I thought that products like jewelry, people might not want to buy online because they are more comfortable. It is very personalized. More comfortable coming into the stores and looking at it and selecting their own diamonds or looking at the designs and checking their sizes and all that. But to my surprise, there are a lot of people are very comfortable buying jewelry online. And when we interviewed some of them, I think one of the advantages is because of the brand. I think people are very familiar with the Habib brand and they are very, very comfortable. So that has given them a lot of confidence. They started from a smaller item, buying from a smaller item, and slowly graduate into buying even bigger pieces online.
Of course, of course. And very quickly, do buyers in Malaysia care much about the provenance? Do they care much about the governance? For example, if they are, you know, maybe sourced unethically, for example, if you can't trace the background or origin of those diamonds, do Malaysians really care about any of that or not really?
I think, especially among the younger people, they do care. They do look at whether it's ethically sourced and all that, especially like established companies. And we have a very strict control of, you know, we track back where the goods come from. We only get from ethical source, and we are able to track the entire journey of the raw material up to the manufacturing. So that that gives a lot of comfort for those who are concerned about this. But the generally in Malaysia, people, I think they base on the reputation of the company.
I understand.
And they already make that assumption that we would have done that. You know, that gives us, that make us even more responsible.
Absolutely. I'm afraid we've run out of time. So thank you for your time and thank you for your thoughts. And of course, Selamat Hari Raya to you and your loved ones, Datuk.
Okay, thank you, Chong, for having me. On behalf of Habib, I would like to wish all Malaysians, especially the Muslims, Selamat Hari Raya.
I was talking to Datuk Sri Mia Sadiq Habib, the Managing Director of Habib Jewels, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.